Good evening, everybody. This is David Noble in Dalgety Bay, and as ever, joined by John Johnson over in the west, Glasgow way, and we are delighted this evening to be joined by, and I'm, Lisa will probably kill me for this, a Swiss-based expert on creativity and technology and education. I came up with that this morning. That was as succinct as I could make it.
It's inspired.
Lisa Stevens, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you very much. I hope you're well too.
Absolutely, yeah, enjoying the holidays. And well, many listeners will be well aware of Lisa from down the years. I would certainly call her a veteran of the edtech scene, and we're delighted to have Lisa on the show for the next half an hour or so. If you're listening to the live stream, you can email edutalker, that's edutalkr at hotmail.co.uk, or if you're on Twitter, you can send a tweet to edutalker, or just post something up and include the hashtag edutalk. So as I say, Lisa, many listeners to the show will have followed you and read your blog down the years, and no doubt met you at several events. But for those listeners who are not aware of who you are, can you give us a little bit of a background and maybe take us right up to how you find yourself in Switzerland these days?
Okay, well, I am not Swiss. I come from, I was born in Sutton Coldfield, right in the middle of England. Although I have to claim, as I'm talking to Scotsmen, my mother is from Glasgow. So I'm very proud of the fact I'm half Scottish. And I've been practising singing Bebo, Babbity and Three Craws and all that recently. But yeah, I come from right in the centre of England, and I really never thought I would move away from there because it was where I was born. And apart from 3 years spent in Hertfordshire when I between the age of 7 and 10, I've always lived in the same area. So I grew up there, and I met my husband in Switzerland, actually, but he's English too. When we got married, we stayed there, and I trained to be a secondary language teacher, specialising in Spanish, although I also taught French. And that was, I always wanted to be a teacher, but I really always wanted to teach kind of that middle age group from about 9 to 13 and younger. But that wasn't something you could train to do at that point, so I trained to be a language teacher because my other great love was Spanish. And I taught that in two comprehensive schools in Birmingham. But then I got to a stage, I've got two children. I've got a 14-year-old and an 11-year-old boy. And it got to the stage where Isaac was 5 and Jude was still a toddler. And teaching was ruining my life. Well, I was letting it ruin my life. And I was getting stressed and het up. And I really, really wanted to follow my heart, which was to teach younger children. But I was too good at doing what I was doing, so they wouldn't let me do any primary outreach. So one day I just got to that point where I had to do something very brave. And I gave in my notice, much to the annoyance of my head teacher, who thought I was throwing away my career. But as I pointed out, I chose to be a mother. I chose to be a teacher. Your children are only young once, so that's what I wanted to do, and I did it. And actually, since then, I have not looked back. The day after I gave in my notice teaching at this very stressful job, I got a job one day a week teaching languages in a prep school, in the prep department, so to children. Well, it started off being the 7 to 11-year-olds, and then by the time the end of my interview, it was the 5 to 11-year-olds, and by an hour in my first day, it became the 18-month-olds to 11-year-olds. So that was one day a week, and I did all kinds of other things, and then I got a job in a local primary school, two local primary schools covering PPA time, teaching languages, Spanish in both schools, and that was really where my interest in technology came along. Because I kind of got involved in Twitter, and I got involved in, I could just see that there was more that I could gain by listening to other people. And I think it also coincided with a kind of, more of a willingness in people to share what they were doing. It seemed to be a growing thing. I'm talking now about 7-8 years ago. It was kind of growing that it was okay to share what you were doing. And it wasn't kind of, that's my lesson plan, you can't have it, kind of thing. So I taught at White House Common Primary School in Sutton Coldfield up until, well, 18 months ago. And in my time there, I taught Spanish, but I started to get involved in technology and whatever. I'll come on to that later, I guess. So I'll just cut the story short. But I kind of really got into it, and then people noticed what I was doing and asked me to go and share what they were doing. And that's, I met David at the Isle of Wight conference a long time ago. And it was happy days. But then 18 months ago, 2 years ago, my husband was made redundant from his job. He works in the pharmaceutical industry. And he was offered a job in Winterthur, in Zurich, in Switzerland. And I thought, okay, it's a bit different. But Switzerland is a place that's very close to our heart because we met here, and it's the most beautiful country. And I don't know if you've ever written down a list of places that you would, you know, that you wouldn't mind living. Well, Switzerland was one of the places. It was a list of three. I wouldn't mind living in Vancouver in Canada, and I wouldn't mind living here. And the other place has been knocked off the list. So that was okay. So I packed up. We packed up our house. My husband was offered a job, and 2 weeks later he moved here. And the school were really lovely and let me give less notice than I should have done. So since October, 2011, we have lived in Winterthur, which is about 20 minutes on the train from the centre of Zurich. And it's really quite lovely here. I don't live in the mountains, and it is not permanently snowy. I do not have a large cow living in my garden. I know it's very disappointing, and it's not constantly cold. I came back to England last April. This time last year, actually, I was in England because my mum was getting married again, and I had a suntan, and I got into so much trouble because everybody else looked pilly-wally, and I had a suntan. But there we are. That's life in Switzerland. Okay, a 10-minute introduction. I'm very sorry. I'm working a little bit all over the place. When I was in England, I had a company called Lucy Bow Limited that was my consultancy, where I did kind of speaking, and I also did consultancy for various people. For example, the BBC, I did some consultancy for them on their primary language website, which I finished quite recently. Actually, I carried that on while I was still here. And also, if anyone that's got young children might know the Lingo show on CBeebies, I was their Spanish consultant on that. And that was very exciting because I got to see my name on the television. Very exciting. But I've also been back in England. I've spoken at the last two, the last three, but the last two while I've been here, conferences in Southampton, organised by Languages Southeast and Joe Dale and Joe Winchester. Joe Rhys-Jones. Her Twitter name's Joe Winchester. So I've been back in Southampton the last two Februarys. I've also done some Apple professional development training at Harrogate Grammar School. And what else have I been doing? I've been doing all kinds of things. I'm on the primary language panel of the Times Educational Supplement resources. So I, you know, help look after the resources on there and check that there aren't too many mistakes and contact people if there are and review them and things. So I've done all kinds of things that way. And here, it has been, I'm not going to lie, it has been quite difficult going from being in England where lots of people know who I am and where I'm recognised as being good at what I do, to coming here where I haven't had a job and nobody has the least clue who Lucy Bow is. And I've kind of almost had to start again. But I have been doing things. I'm now a Swiss Apple Distinguished Educator. So I've been working with the Swiss Apple people and done some professional development training with them. I also help my children go to the international school in Winterthur, and I've been kind of voluntarily helping there in the library, and they've kind of over time got to know what my skills are. So now they're using my skills, and I'm giving them training on using iPads and technology, and they ask me questions about technology and all kinds of stuff. So that's not really kind of official stuff, but it's still, you know, and I do the odd day of supply at another international school, the deputy head of which I met on an Apple training thing I was doing. Mm-hmm. So, I'm writing articles and doing all kinds of things. So it's been very different. And I've carried on blogging. Mm-hmm. So I've carried on with my website and carried on sharing and try to keep myself visible and sharing what I do, because that's what I like doing.
Yeah. Lisa, yeah. Can I just ask you about your blog? And we'll pass the link on to listeners later on. I mean, it's certainly, I don't know, in terms of awards and things like that, and I'm neither John nor I are linguists, but it is an astounding blog. And even just going through it last night with all this about learning about Egypt and such like, it's just astonishing. The one thing that really jumps out for me is just, as ever with your blog, it is so colourful and varied, and it's all about, you know, videos about the kids getting mucky and making puppets and such like. It's just an astonishing mix of media within your blog. So I'm just wondering how your approach to blogging has changed or developed in recent years.
Yeah, well, since I've been here, obviously I haven't had a class to report back on what I've been doing within my classroom, which is how it really started out way back. I started it actually after that first Isle of Wight conference. And my first, I think one of my very first blog posts actually quoted your Twitter comment that you were sitting on the beach reflecting on what I'd said. And honestly, that touched me. So I will never forget that, because I thought, this man is not a linguist, but yet what I said was important and he's tweeted about me. And you know I'm very excitable. But I think that was one of the very first posts I wrote about how exciting it was to be able to share what I was doing in the classroom. Because I really do believe that what we do in our classroom is worth celebrating. I think that the work that kids do is worth celebrating, and it's I really love that. And that's how my blog started out. It started out as sharing ideas I'd had and how they've worked in the classroom, and kind of giving advice on, you know, this didn't actually work. And I think people found that quite helpful, because they were getting the resources, but they're also getting reflection on, well, actually that didn't work. If you've got a good idea on how I could make it work, because I really want to. But over time, because now I don't have my own class, it's more thinking, okay, if I did have, what would I do? So now it's kind of more provision of ideas and resources than it is a celebration of what was going on. And that in part happened before I came here, because the whole idea of celebrating the kids' work was being taken on by the school. And it was being more celebrated on the school website. So that kind of role that I felt needed to be filled was being fulfilled somewhere else. And that kind of celebration bit and the resource sharing has continued. I don't know. My blog has become less pink than it was, because people said that it was a bit too brightly pink. So I've tried to become a little bit more staid as I've got older. But it's still pink and it's still colourful, because that's me. You know, I wear dungarees. I know nobody else does, but I like them. And I'm not going to compromise that, because that's me.
Yeah. Lisa, do you have an idea of who your audience is these days, or do you have a kind of target audience or audiences in mind?
I don't really. I just keep writing and hope that somebody's listening. And I know they are. And I have noticed that over time, and I know this is something that Kevin McLaughlin commented on the other day, that we write blog posts now and people don't comment as much as they used to, because the comments are now coming out on Twitter. And people retweet you and kind of say, oh, that was a good blog post by Lisa, but they don't actually leave the comment on the blog. So in some ways it's quite difficult to tell. And also because I took the Well, I lost the counter on my blog, and couldn't remember how many hits I'd got, and just felt that it was a vanity thing, so I never put it back up there. So I could be writing to nobody, but do you know what? I don't care, because it kind of serves a purpose. It gives me an expression for what I want to share, and there's somebody retweeted, you know, it's been retweeted 3 or 4 times, the last post I wrote. So I know somebody's read it, and I still get asked to speak places. So somebody that obviously knows I'm doing something right. So I think it's kind of aimed at primary language teachers, because it is about language learning. But I think you can still learn stuff from it, even if you don't teach primary languages. I mean, a lot of the stuff is about literacy. And it's about sharing. So I'd recommend anyone to have a look at it. I don't write my posts in Spanish. Although I did have a very interesting comment that somebody in my Google Reader, I've got like searches for Lisi Bow, and I found a comment once. Somebody had obviously been told on their course that they had to review a blog, and they'd reviewed mine, and their criticism was there was too much foreign language in it, which I thought was a bit. I very politely replied and said, did you read the tagline of my blog?
And so, for the benefit of listeners, yeah, for the live stream, your website is back up, so Sinclair's done his job.
It is, yes, he's just tweeting me.
So it's lisibo.com, that's lisibo.com, yeah, for anybody, yeah, interested. John?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. In some ways, it's easier because I don't know. I think when I was particularly stressed, it was at the beginning of my teaching career, and I had small children, and I taught in 2 very, very challenging schools. I had really good colleagues, but there wasn't the support that I would have liked, and I think that was part of the problem. There wasn't the support from above that I would have liked. But since that, I have had moments of stress when I've taken on too much, because I'm just a girl that can't say no, as the song says. But I think the variety has kept me going, and I'm quite easily bored. So when I was in England, I worked at the school for 2 days a week, and the rest of my time I had for consultancy, for blogging, for Apple stuff, for writing articles, and I liked that because I was never doing the one thing for too long. Sometimes when I had lots of things all on top of each other, but I had time. I wasn't in a formal work environment for the whole week. So I could decide when I wanted to do that, to a certain extent. So I could go and run. And that's when I started running, which I found really, really helpful in de-stressing myself. I just go for a run and listen to music, and that's my me time. I think it's important to not let yourself get stressed, to take time for yourself. And I know I've got better at that over time. And to stop being such a perfectionist. I still have very, very high standards of myself, but I have ceased trying to make everything absolutely perfect, because in life things aren't perfect, and I could strive forever and it still wouldn't be. So there comes a point where you just have to say, enough is enough, that's it. Yeah. So that, yeah.
I think that's a pretty good trick. If you can do it, it's a good answer.
Yeah.
And another thing I was thinking about, obviously that you're using a lot of tech,
mm-hmm.
In various ways, to teach language, to communicate this teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder how important the actual tech is to you. Do you see yourself as a technologist who teaches or a teacher who uses technology?
I am a teacher. I am a teacher and I will use the best tool for doing the job. And if that is an iPad, it's an iPad. If it's a pen and paper, it's a pen and paper. I like pen and paper. I like proper books. E-books are lovely, but there's nothing like a proper book that you can flick the pages in. I'm very much a teacher, but I'm a teacher that has discovered that technology can be used to make my teaching even better and that children can learn even better on occasions if we use technology. For example, you know, we've used Twitter in the classroom to get instant responses to questions children have wanted to know the answer to. We could have Googled it, but we use Twitter to do it. We've used we've done e-twinning to communicate with other countries. I've shared with them that that's something we couldn't do when I was a child, but now the world is right there at our fingertips and we can find out about it. You know, making stories using Book Creator on the iPad is just absolutely amazing. And it allows you to create something that if you did it by hand would take so much longer. And I know kids have to learn that things take time, but sometimes it's just lovely to see their faces when something just comes together. You know, and I remember back to my early days of technology when I first recorded the children speaking Spanish and played it back to them. The looks on their faces, because they could actually hear what they sounded like. And it's like, is that really me? It's like, yeah. And that was so motivating for them. But it also served the purpose of I had a permanent record of what they'd been doing in class. But yeah, I really, you know, I can't stress enough that I am a teacher who loves using technology because it's useful in certain circumstances. But I'm not one of these people that would just say everybody should have an iPad. And it really actually quite upsets me that schools go out and just buy iPads and have no plan or vision about what they're going to do. And then they sit in cupboards. That infuriates me.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of schools and there's a lot of various pieces of technology from the last
yeah, exactly, decade. Interactive whiteboards, which, don't get me started,
which gather dust, but all these things, and whiteboards I think are a great example. Mm-hmm. I've seen used that just wonderfully.
But yes,
you've also seen a big bit of paper used well as well, so
exactly
I suppose it is catching a balance between mm-hmm. between yeah. these things. The other thing, I mean, you talked earlier about blogging and how it's changed mm-hmm. because you've sort of stepped out of the classroom a wee bit.
Yeah.
And I mean,
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Well, actually, we're moving back to the United Kingdom. In July and in September I can't say very much, but I will be back in the classroom and I am so excited, so very, very excited. I have missed being in a classroom so much. I teach to Spanish children English and it started out as an hour, but they enjoy it so much they said to their mum, can we have another hour? So I now teach them 2 hours a week and it's my favorite time of the week and I love it. So yes, I will be back in the classroom and I will be back sharing what's going on. I think I might even be teaching in two different schools, which will be a very different, two very, very different schools. So we'll have to see, though. We'll have to see what happens, because nothing's set in stone. Yeah. So you never know, my blog might start going back to the way it was before. but I have found I've written less but longer posts. So if you look at the last one I wrote on the Egyptians, it took me a very long time, because I've got the time to do that. Before it was shorter posts. So yeah, so very exciting. And hopefully I'll carry on doing some of the stuff that I've done here. So I've now got to rearrange my transfer back to the United Kingdom from Switzerland, and let everybody know I'm coming back. So some people knew, but yes, this is my first official announcement.
Oh. that's fantastic news, Lisa, and best wishes for your return.
We've just got a
few minutes left, and I'll take over with the next few questions. I think John believes he may have problems with his, and I know we can hear him fine, but possibly his mic's not broadcasting that well. Just going back to what I was saying before about, you know, those who know you, Lisa, know about the incredible classroom practice, you know, using, as you say, the best tools and the best approaches at the time with the children that you're working with. Can you just say a wee bit more about what has worked for you then, in terms of working classrooms, just in terms of pedagogies in general, not necessarily to do with language teaching, but when you're working with 18-month-old children up to, you know, almost teenagers.
Yeah.
Over time and through your experience, you know, what kinds of wonderful, colourful resources and approaches do you feel that have worked for you, and it might well be worth other teachers trying out if they haven't done so already?
Yeah. I found anything that is fun, that gets children smiling, has worked really well. Sometimes you have issues with having to calm them down again, but that's fine, because for me, going to school is something you have to do. Children have no choice about it. They have to go. So why make it a miserable experience for them? And if it's your job, why be miserable the whole time? So for me, learning should have fun in it. Yeah, we have to be serious sometimes, but it should be fun. So songs and doing actions, just being allowing children to just express themselves a little bit, making up little plays, not doing lots of talking at the front, I found has been really, really useful. So using, you know, little clips from YouTube or little videos as a starting point, and then perhaps saying, okay, here's your starting point. Be inspired by this. So it could be, thinking back to something I've done on healthy eating, a little video about healthy eating, and then sent the kids away, and in groups they prepared their own advert about healthy eating. So that they've got some inspiration, but then they get some input. And then we've talked about things and you know, made comments, positives, you know, three positives and one thing that they could do to make it even better. Recording what the children are doing, whether that's in a written form, whether it's just audio, and then playing it back and sharing it with people has been really motivational, because it's not then not just something that the teacher's seen, but other people in the school see, their parents have seen. I mean, kids coming in going, I'm on my granny's iPod. And that was really, really exciting for them. Sharing it with, knowing that when I was at White House Common that I would be sharing things with other schools was very motivational. For the children and their learning, because they knew that they were very proud of the fact that what they did was being shared with other people, and that their ideas and their input was being shared. I think that's giving a self-worth, I think, is really important. And that's one way that technology has really helped. So using things like recording, using Twitter, sharing in whatever way you can, Well, White House Common iPads have only just come out, so I haven't really worked with those with a class of children yet. But it, you know, on a one-to-one basis, and I'm using them in, when I've worked on that, those odd days in schools. Having the ability to work in pairs with something that's so portable has been really, really important too, that can be taken outside the classroom and videoed, you know, videoing things, videoing each other, making tours around the school. Giving ownership of the learning to the children, I think, would be what underpins it all for me. I'm rabbiting on again. Have I answered the question?
It's all good stuff, Lisa. And I don't know if this is a kind of daft question, but I just imagine for a moment that you have, say, a primary teacher, whatever subject area or specialisms or none, and you know they want to make things fun and enjoyable for young people. They maybe are getting a little bit frustrated by admin and bureaucracy and such like within the you know, I know myself just to, you know, how much of the job is taken up with stuff that's nothing to do with, or very little to do with learning. Yeah. But a moment comes maybe during a holiday or such like where they think, right, now's the time to make a change. But how would somebody who's possibly got a great deal of creativity and within them and a spark and they're ready to go, how would you suggest through your own experience that they get started in actually transforming their schemes of work and their plans and such like? And what are the potential pitfalls?
I think the potential pitfalls are trying to do too much. I think my advice would be choose something, just something small, and try it out for a couple of weeks. And then when you're kind of comfortable with doing that, then add something else. Rather than going in, I mean, I know I do it. I've been to a conference or something and I'm all inspired and I redesign all my lessons for the entire week so that every lesson has got something new in it. And that's the pitfall, because you just get exhausted because you're not able to... You're just giving the whole time, and you're learning all the time, and it's just too much. So my advice would be to choose something. Say, for example, I don't know, if you happen to have iPads in your school or something, perhaps choosing one, something like Book Creator, and experimenting with that over a period of time. Perhaps with one class, perhaps with several classes, but the same kind of thing. Until you're comfortable with that, and then try something else. Be thinking about it, but don't try and launch too many things at once, because otherwise you're spinning plates, aren't you? And that's really difficult. I can't do that. And also, I would say, I love Twitter, but I would say, you know, talk to other people. And you know, if within your school you don't have other people that are creatively minded, join Twitter and you tweet me, and I will find you some Tweety buddies that will encourage you. I know plenty. Mm-hmm. And that's how it works. You know, one person has an idea and says, can you help me? And within seconds, we can find people that are down the road that have got ideas that can meet you for coffee. And that's the wonder of having a social network now. That's what I would say.
Yeah. That's great advice, Lisa. John, I don't know if you wanted to try and come in at this point as we enter the last 5 minutes or so. Just before you do, I'll just say that if you're listening to the live show, still get time to get in touch. You can email edutalker@hotmail.co.uk, or if you're on Twitter, just include the hashtag edutalk, and one of the three of us will pick up your comment or question for Lisa. John? Yeah, I'll go and check just now.
Yeah. Sometimes, well, you see, it's very easy to say these things. But I've built up over time. But I know from experience that if you try and do too much at once, that's when you start falling flat on your face. And my other advice would be, don't give up. I mean, I was using social media in my school for several years before anybody within the school actually caught on to the power of it. And it wasn't really until I left that it's really taken off. So, you know, it's frustrating sometimes, but keep at it because it's really worth it. And I know from the kids at school that they really appreciated it. And that to me is the important thing because that's my job.
Yeah. Well, listen, John is definitely silent, so apologies for
the
you're listening. Yeah, it's a second week in a row. this is the brains behind EduTalk as well. What we're going to do? just two questions to finish, Lisa. First of all, you know, how do you feel education is changing, particularly as you cast your gaze from Switzerland to mm-hmm. the UK, and I suppose England in particular? And I'll just throw another question in. Just interested in what you feel languages teachers should be looking out for. What's on the horizon in terms of approaches? For example, with your role as an Apple Distinguished Educator, what's happening there? What should we be looking out for in the coming months?
Wow, that's a really big question. Okay, education. Being in Switzerland has been really, really eye-opening for me because I have had seen what the Swiss education system is like. And if we think we're restricted sometimes in Switzerland, that the teachers are even more restricted. You know, there's a canton where they haven't even got wireless in schools because it's considered to be too dangerous. So if we think we have problems, that there are other people that have other issues. Experience of the international school system has been really enlightening too. And my boys have both been following the International Baccalaureate program. And for me, the primary years program is just absolutely brilliant because it is completely child-centered and looking at children exploring and inquiring into things, posing their own questions, exploring things, which I think is what, you know, a great way of learning. So that's been interesting. Looking from here back to England, there's a certain person I would really quite like to strangle. I'm sure everybody knows who I'm talking about. It's so frustrating. I'm finding it really frustrating that it seems that the people that are making decisions about education really haven't got a clue. I'm getting all political. It just seems so wrong, some of the decisions that are being made. And from a language perspective, it really grieved me that with the change of government, all the primary language planning and whatever went out the window, and consultants and whatever were let go, and all the support is disbanded, and now primary languages are back on the agenda again, but there's nobody to support them because all the consultants, all the teams, and I know it's not just languages, it's lots of things, lots of areas, the same things are happening, and it's a time when we need to support each other. And I think that's where things like Twitter and, local groups, supporting one another is going to be so important, and sharing ideas and sharing resources. Otherwise, we're all going to be falling to pieces with the overwork and the stress and not knowing exactly where we're going. In terms of Apple-y stuff, I just go back to what I said before. I think you should start with what do you want to do and why do you want to do it, and then find the technology that allows you to do that. I'm not going to say go out and buy an iPad, go out and buy an Apple TV, go and do this, go and do that. I want people to think. I think this is what people should do. They should think about what do they want to do, why do I want to do it, and then go and look at your technology. Oh, I've got all strident and political.
Just to point out, of course, that it was a metaphorical strangulation that we were talking about.
Oh yeah. Oh no, I wouldn't literally.
We don't mention names, and we won't mention.
No,
names.
Exactly.
I just noticed on Twitter there. I don't know the person is.
Pelado. Yeah.
Loves your advice about don't give up, but don't spin plates.
Yeah. He's one of my new friends that I made in February at the at Joe Dale's and the conference in Southampton. And another person that, you know, you tweet with people for ages and then you don't actually get to meet them for, you know, it can be years. And then all of a sudden, oh, I've spoken to you so many times and you feel like you know them. So that's it. I haven't seen either of you for ages, but, you know, that's just the way life is, isn't it? And that's the beauty of Skype and stuff. So
absolutely, yeah. John, I don't know if you've got any final points for Lisa. Obviously, we can't hear you, but you can just, I suppose, Lisa could just answer.
I could repeat the question.
Of course, there you go.
I've got tons of questions, but this is... I don't know what I've done to this setup. I'm going to at it again. I think just at this time, it's probably thank you very much, Lisa. I'd like to get some of the things you've talked about at some time when I'm not when I'm actually a bit louder than this. You touched on some really interesting things. I think that the main thing you were talking about is to get people started, and I'm really interested in the gap between people who are very... Oh, I'm live now.
Are you good?
Yeah, that seems to work.
I was kind of panicking about the dead air there.
Oh, we used to do that. But the difference between...
Yeah.
Seems to be a big. Should they be brought in, or should they? Well, children get different experiences from different people.
I think there are lots of things that I don't know how to do. I have a real mind block about spreadsheets. Spreadsheets and me just don't get on. But to say I couldn't teach because I couldn't do spreadsheets would be really sad, because I've got a lot to offer. So I think to a certain extent you need to be able to handle technology up to a point. I don't think you need to be a technological whiz kid to be a good teacher, because I think there are ways of doing things, and like you say, that the experience over time will be, you know, what should balance out. But I think if you're moving forward in terms of looking to moving away from the teacher spending the whole lesson talking and children spending the whole lesson writing, I think if your pedagogy is looking to for the child to be at the center of what you're doing, I think you can get away with being less techno-savvy. But I do think that there is going to come a point where you do need to have some vague understanding of what's going on. But you see, I started out not knowing anything, and I just could see, I think that the key is you have to see that it's worth investigating. You have to see that it's worthwhile and it is going to make a difference. I guess like anything, if you can see a purpose to it, then it's worth making a bit of an effort. So I suppose it's difficult if you're in a situation where there's nobody else in your school that is kind of thinking along the same area direction as you, or in your area or whatever, then it can be quite scary. But I really would encourage people to take just little steps. You don't have to jump off the edge of a cliff. It can just be little things. Like my mum has now got a Kindle and has managed to send me an email. I thought that would never happen, but it has. And she Skyped me once. She's only done it once. It scared her so much. But, you know, things happen that you don't think will ever happen. I moved to Switzerland. I never thought I would live in another country. I never thought I would live anywhere other than Sutton Coldfield, because I'm a home girl. But I love it here. And I'm really going to miss it when I come back to England. But, you know, I've had this experience and no one can take it away from me. So,
And Palado is saying that... looking forward to having you back in Blighty.
Also, he only lives down the road.
And I think his question maybe relates to what Coach John's just asked you there. He's asking how do you overcome a tech shy MFL department? Do you just lead by example and hope that they follow?
I think there's a lot to be said for leading by example. I think if you start imposing things on people, that's when you get people's backs up. But if you've led by example and you've shown that it has made some kind of impact on the learning that's been going on. And I know that pest at the children, that your learners will do a lot of the work for you, because that's how it happened for me. The kids were all going, the teacher, you never guess what I did with Senora Stevens the other day. Have you seen this? She does this. Why don't you do that? And I mean, I know it can, especially if it's like you've been teaching for 20 years and someone comes in that's been teaching for 2 years and the kids were like, "Hey, have you seen her? And him, he does this and whatever." But I think that you just leading by example and being as patient as you can be while still pushing, I think. Being patiently pushy. Because I think 7 years to wait for something is a long time. But, you know, little by little things happen. And don't give up. And if you are getting despondent, talk to somebody else that's doing the same thing or someone that's been through it and get them to give you a pat on the back and a bit of a boost. And, I know I sound all pally and we're in it together, but we are. Mm-hmm. And it's important that we understand that it's okay to ask people for help, that it's okay to say, I'm having a, you know, have you got any ideas? I've got a really bad headache and I've got a plan for tomorrow. Anyone got any ideas what earth I could do with bottom set grade, you know, year 10 or something, because they're drawing my head in. That's okay, because we're human beings. We're not perfect robots that have the perfect lesson plan the whole time. Mm-hmm. I know I'm not, anyway.
Mm. Lisa, listen, it's been fantastic having you on the show tonight, and best wishes to you and your family for the future.
Thank you.
I think on behalf of everybody, we'll be looking forward to seeing you back in Blighty, and no doubt we'll catch up at a teach meet somewhere in the coming months. Thanks again, and what we'll do is we'll put a link to lisibo.com on the website when the audio goes up, and of course you can follow at Lisibo on Twitter. Next week on Wednesday the 10th of April at 2 p.m. BST, British Summer Time, we're going to be interviewing, in fact it'll be myself, John will be busy working, we'll be interviewing a couple of staff at Move On, which is a housing charity in Edinburgh, and we'll be discussing the topic of supporting people affected by homelessness and about how to go about contributing to preventing homelessness. So I hope you can join us then. Until next time, goodbye.
Bye. Thank you.